Ain't nothing on TV tonight.
No, I noticed that. There's no basketball games. I mean, we're
There's
live.
the college basketball is on. Jimmy V Classic.
Oh,
Oh,
yeah, I'm going to.
ladies, are we live? Are we live? Is it live? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in once again to the place where sports opinions collide. I am your host, 12 Kyle, and welcome to another weekly edition of the best 2 hours of your sports week. This is Dead End Sports. We want to thank you for tuning in as you do each and every Tuesday night. You can catch us live on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to the channel. Just go to the subscribe button right there, youtube.com/deadendsports. A lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Of course, I will not be doing it alone. Got the crew in the building. First up, my man, BZ430. 4:30, BZ, what up, though?
What up, though? What's up? What's up? What's going on, Kyle?
Chilling, man. Chilling. What's going on with you?
Man, I wish I was in your shoes. You out at a hotel, man. You out in paradise somewhere, man. Like, where?
If I told you where I was, you'd be like, man, I'll be back in the A tomorrow, man. So it's all good.
Like, man, like, you out in a hotel. I'm thinking paradise somewhere, man. If I look out that window right behind you, man, you're gonna be. I'm seeing like
Man, trust me. If I was in
a
paradise,
sand and blue waters.
If I was in paradise, I'm gonna be doing this show right
Y'all remember
now. Yeah, if I was in paradise, I wouldn't be doing this show. I'd be like, all right, I'll catch y'all next week.
Man.
Also join us, man, the homie Ken. Ken, what's going on, Playboy?
Trying to recover, man. I know we haven't had a show in what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, man, just been down and out, man. I've been on the shelf. I've been on the IR list.
Hey, man.
But
You know what that means. More old jokes are gonna come.
I know. I know. I'll accept it. At least I'm still here.
Hold on, Ken. Are you older than Mike? Is Mike older than you?
Mike is 2 years younger than I am. He's 38.
I thought Mike said he was older than you.
Nah. That's why I always refer to him as my little brother sometimes, because he and my brother are the same age. That's why I always say, you're the
gotcha.
same age as my brother. So.
Okay, I could have sworn I heard it. I thought he said that he was older than you. I was like, wait a minute, Mike older than Ken? Okay, all right. And also join us, man. FIFO is not going to be on with us tonight, man, but filling in for FIFO is our homie, man, the sixth man, our boy Q. Q, what up?
Hey, what's up, everybody? What's going on, Kyle? Just here to talk about new
Chilling, man. What's up
sports.
with you, young buck?
Man, Eagles terrible. Six is terrible. But other than that, man, I'm going to survive,
Hey,
man.
man.
It's all good,
Hey,
though.
Q. Q, we talk about this every fall, man.
It's okay.
Trust in the process, right? You still
Hey,
trust in the process?
I still do trust the process. I think I'm more confident in that than the Eagles. I've been saying that, but
I need y'all to beat Washington, though, for real.
We're not gonna beat Washington. Just understand that. But anyway, here to talk about sports and have some fun. So let's get into it.
I need Ben Simmons to come back. That's what I need.
January, maybe.
Okay. They're talking point guards. We'll see. That would be dope.
16-point guard.
No doubt. Like I said, a lot of stuff to talk about, man. We're going to get right to it. The playoffs in college football have been set. The committee has made their decision. We have Alabama facing off as the number one seed against the number four seed, the Washington Huskies. And then you have the number two seed, Ohio State. Buckeyes going up against the number three seed, the Clemson Tigers. So I'll start right there, B. Did the playoff committee get it right?
Oh, man. Okay. It's probably coming from a little biased space. So I would put Michigan over Washington as that final, the final fourth squad. Because I just think Washington is going to get, I think that's not even going to be a game, Alabama and Washington. I think I forgot what day the actual semifinal games are, but I think after the day after those games, we're going to be like, why was Washington even in the playoffs? Because they're going to get, it's not going to be a contest. And I really think that Michigan, with them being one of the top, I think the top defense in college, is going to put up, a, will put up, a, could have put up a better fight against Alabama. I'm not saying they're going to win or anything like that, but I think we would have had a much more entertaining game if Michigan was sliding at that fourth spot. But other than that, I mean, I didn't have no issue with it. Ohio State only a one-loss team, which was to Penn State. Yeah, I knew Clemson was – I think going into this past weekend, I think Clemson and Alabama were the only two teams that I felt that even if they would have lost, they would have still been okay. I think they'd have still been good. They'd have still been in the final, you know, final four teams to be in the playoffs. But I was praying for Washington to lose. Cause I was like, man, if Washington loses to Colorado, they definitely gonna slide Michigan up in there. Mm-hmm. But you know, they didn't catch the L. And I was hoping maybe if Clemson, but then I thought about it, I'm like, well, no, Clemson not gonna lose. And then if they do lose, I think they're gonna still keep them in there. I wouldn't. They probably it would have been a little bit interesting if Clemson would have lost and they'd have slide Michigan in there. But yeah, just coming from a little bias, like I wanted to see Michigan in the playoff. You know, of course, you know, in college football, kind of coaches kind of make they're good at making a name for themselves in college more so than NFL. But yeah, man, you know, Jim Harbaugh and Urban Meyer and Nixon, like I definitely could have saw that going into this playoff. But yeah, if I was to take out one squad, it would definitely be Washington, just because I just think when we watch this game, we're going to be like, what the heck? It's going to probably be over. It's going to be over by the third quarter or something like that. You know, Alabama going to have a – you know, they were teams down, man. So, Alabama going to be up by like three touchdowns by the time third quarter come around. So, I don't know. That's just me. I mean, you know, you can make an argument for Penn State because they won a conference. But, you know, that's a two-loss squad, you know, and they beat Ohio State. Everybody called that game was like, you know, called that game was a fluke because, you know, Penn State – had control the whole time, but then they got blown out by like 30-something points to Michigan. So it is a lot of little variations, man. But just me being a little biased to my home state, I was hoping to see Michigan slide in there at that fourth spot. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's funny because people complain about, oh, they need 18 playoff. Well, guess what? If they expand to 18, they're going to be talking about the last two teams that didn't make the eight. Or whatever, exactly. Like, oh, they deserve to be the 7 and the 8 seed going into the play. Like, it's going to still be complaining regardless if they expand it to an additional 4. So it's never going to be a happy medium place with the playoffs, you know. Because I even said this before they even came with the playoffs. I said, when they said it was only going to be 4 teams, I'm like, man, 4 teams, people are going to be complaining. And look what we've been doing for the past, what, 2-3 years since they started the college playoff every time. Oh, that fourth team, they don't be in there. Da, da, da. It's always a team or two that should have a shot opposed to another team that's in there. So if they do that with 8, it's going to be the same thing. But, you know, it is what it is.
What about you, Q? Did the college playoff football committee, did they get it right?
I'll just say yeah for the sake of arguing. Like B said, every single time since they've made this playoff system – they've always had people come in and say, oh, well, this team deserved it, or this team deserved it, this team deserved it. And I'm just kind of over it because college football is already one of my least favorite sports just because I hate the game and what they do to the players. But when it comes to just their already flawed system, it's perfect because it's imperfect. And I really don't care that much to, you know, say, oh, Louisville deserved to be in that fourth spot, or oh, Michigan deserved to be in that fourth spot. It is what it is at this point. And if you want to fix it, then either fans or the community needs to expand the playoffs, more teams, like an NFL playoff system, because they're already treating the players like they're pros. We're not going to get into that conversation. But since they're already doing that, then they should just already make a pro-style playoff system instead of just having those four teams. That's just my opinion. So I'll say that they did get it right, but they can't make it a lot better than what it is right now.
True indeed. What about you, Kent? Did the college playoff football committee, man, did they get it right?
Hey, B, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Penn State versus Alabama. How do you think Penn State would match up?
They probably would have felt out better than Washington. I don't know. I'm just not really sold on Washington. Maybe it's like that Pac-12 out in the West. This is like those, they're just so smaller. I can see Alabama wearing out Washington.
Have you seen a lot of Washington this year, B? I'm curious.
Like twice.
Okay. Okay.
Like twice. I mean, I guess that's a lot. That's a lot considering that they're West Coast.
Right.
Team. You know what I'm saying? Right. So, yeah, I saw them twice. I watched them in this Pac-12 championship game, and I watched them against USC.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, USC. Well. Yep, I watched them against USC. So yeah, twice. So I'm just, yeah. I just wasn't sold, and I think they lost to USC when they played them.
They did, yeah.
They did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got spanked by them. So yeah, it's just like this is who y'all gonna have going against Alabama, and y'all expect this to be an entertaining game. So I hope they prove me wrong. I hope we sit here and be like, oh, this is actually a good game, but I don't think it will. But yeah. I think Penn State would have fared better than Washington.
A little bit more physical.
Yeah.
Washington plays really, really light.
Yes.
When I see them play, it looks like everything they do is like really light on their toes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Penn State play a little bit more rugged, a little bit more to the ground. Like, they'll hit you. Washington, I don't know if they're going to be up for them boys in Alabama when one of them catch them. I don't know if they're going to be ready for that, man, because this is a different breed. Down there. For me, I think it's tough because, like, there's arguments all around. Right. And I think that when you lose two of your last three, like Michigan had, you can't put them in. And you can't lose late. And you have a quarterback whose shoulder is all broken. And we saw what he did. B, I know that defense is for real, but if that quarterback gave away, what, 14 points yep. to Ohio State? Yep.
14 points.
Yep. Sure did.
Why they lost. So, and he was playing injured. And respect to that kid, man, because, you know, to go up against Ohio State and they're going to hit you, that took a lot of guts. But, you know, he tried to go out and get that L, and they had a 10-point lead. They blew it. And you could argue the call blew it, but whatever, but nevertheless, it was a loss. I think so. If you put them up against Alabama, Spates may last two or three series before one of them come around that corner and catch him, and then you get back up there. And then what are you going to do? Now, I think the defense will be able to hold them for a while, but offensively, they would have struggled. But the fact is, they lost two of the last three, and I think that for me, you can't put them in because of that. Do I think they're one of the four best teams in the country? Absolutely. But I think Washington having one loss, man, and I've always been against the committee, whether it's the BCS or whether it's the playoff committee, rewarding teams because they play in a bigger conference like they have in the past. And when you see guys like TCU or Baylor, I think one year, didn't get in. And we know they would have got smashed too, but
right.
they deserved to get in because of their record. So Washington, hey, you're in. Be careful what you ask for. And now it's up to you to go prove and show that you deserve to be in that spot. Show that the committee got it right by going up there and playing, matching up against them boys. If Lamar Jackson didn't fold down the stretch, I would have argued Louisville to get in. But they just fell apart. And I think that Louisville wouldn't have even gotten in the way this committee is going. I think they probably would have put Washington in. But, you know, outside of – I think Washington – you're looking at Washington, Penn State, or Michigan. And I think Michigan can beat both of those teams three out of four times. But the fact is, you know – Washington lost. I mean, Michigan lost two of their three. And, you know, I think Penn State had two losses on their record. And I know they beat Ohio State. So yeah. it's muddy, man. It's real muddy. But I'm with Q. I'm with B. I think we need to expand it. Six teams, eight teams, whatever. I think at that point, you can't argue for not teams 9 and 10. At that point, you're really making up some stuff just to create controversy. You know, I even think if you go six, we don't need to argue. Well, I don't think they can do six. But, you know, I think if you get into six or eight or whatever that number is, at that point, if you argue for anybody outside of that, I mean, you probably shut up and just take what we got. Because at that point, that top 10 is your proven commodity. And if you hang, if you're lingering around 9 or 10, you know, you better be undefeated, you know, for you to and a real good resume for you to argue about whether you're going to be in. But at this point, I think right now, I think people said it's manufactured controversy. And I think this year, definitely, there was a real argument to be had about who gets in. But I think they got it right.
Right.
By the way,
I think
Florida Atlantic just beat Texas. Just thought I'll throw that out there. College basketball.
And basketball?
Yeah, college basketball.
Oh, Lord, Shaka, you better watch your back. You better watch your back, Shaka. They just got Charlie up out the paint.
For real, though.
And they'll move you up out of there. I think everybody made some great points. I think, did they get it right? Yeah, they did get it right to some degree. But I think the frustrating part is that you have a conference champion in the winner of the Big Ten, and they're not going. So, you know, you got Ohio State, who has one loss, but, you know, you have a Big Ten champion that's sitting at home. Well, not sitting at home, but, I mean, they're going to a bowl game, but they're not in the Final Four. And it's almost like, you know, and I know college basketball is different as far as the NCAA setup, but in theory, there's a automatic bid for the ACC champion into this field of 64. So if Wake Forest goes 10 and 15 for the year, but wins the ACC tournament, they're automatically in, regardless of how they finish through the season. So, and I know that that does not give, in college football, they don't give you an automatic bid, but what they've done is basically undermine the purpose of a conference championship. So if the Big Ten, you had two teams playing for the Big Ten title, and we pretty much knew that neither one of them was going to get in, then why play the Big Ten title? I mean, just 5 years ago, Urban Meyer said, and I quote, "The champion of the Big Ten should get to the playoffs." And now his team is going in, and then they weren't even in it. So I think that's where they got it wrong, but that's not their problem. Like Ken said, it depends on when you lose, how many losses that you have. Ohio State only had one loss, and they lost late, and they happened to lose the same weekend that everybody else lost. I think personally it's just Alabama and everybody else. I think there's a – as far as talent, as far as how they play, I think Clemson probably has the best opportunity to beat them, but we haven't seen Clemson at their best all season long. So, you know, it would take a monumental effort from Clemson to beat them. But did they get it right? Yeah, they did. It's just – it sucks that the you know, the Big Ten winner is out of it. I think – Even if you expand it to 8, which I don't think they're going to do, because their case, the argument they'll make is that means another week of playing. But that means that you have to either push the season up or you have to push the ending of the season up, and they don't want to do that to get the games to fall, where basically you can get them to fall during the holidays or what have you. But I think they got it right. I just think it sucks that, you know, you got Penn State sitting at home when, you know, they're the conference champions. So they're gonna get a ring, but they're not going to the Final Four, if you will. So we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how many of these bowl games I'm gonna watch. I'm definitely gonna watch the Final Four. But I mean it's so many. If you're playing in a bowl game before Christmas, I'm probably not watching.
Ohio State. Florida Atlantic beat Ohio State. Texas playing Michigan right now.
Okay. Yeah. All good. So we'll see what happens, man. So the college football playoffs have been set. Moving on, man, last night, NBA, Klay Thompson, what can I say, goes for 60 points. 60 points in 29 minutes.
John Wall got 50 right now.
Wow.
Are you serious?
John Wall got 50, and Lou Williams had like 48 last night.
Wow. So, Klay Thompson for the Golden State Warriors goes off last night. I mean, he was hitting from everywhere. Let's start right there, Q, man. What's your thoughts on Klay going for 60 in 29 minutes?
Man, Golden State is hitting that point where Miami in 2011 was at that point when they first got the big three, and they were struggling just a little bit. They were losing a couple games. I think it was Then they lost a couple games like Charlotte or something, and people were panicking, like, oh, this was a mistake. LeBron should have stayed. You know, this was – let me read you the stat real quick. Klay Thompson had the ball in his hands for a total of 90 seconds last night. 46 touches, 60 points. Klay dribbled 11 times on his 21 field goals, 11 times. And he had the ball for 1.5 seconds per touch in the front court. To me, that's more impressive than some of the greatest like scoring outings that we've seen, because he didn't have the ball dominantly in his hand. He wasn't going Kobe 81. He could have passed Kobe's 81 last night. He did not play the fourth quarter. So what this signifies to me is that Klay is being Klay in the regular season, but we have to temper expectations because we know how Klay does in the playoffs and in the finals. Hopefully he demands the ball more in the playoffs because they now have KD, and he seems like he's upset that people would even ask him to take less touches. But as we're seeing, Duke can touch the ball 11 times and literally score 60. So what we're seeing right now is that, in my opinion, Reggie, he's like a Reggie on steroids, man. Like, man, I'm going to quote my boy Snotty Dripping on that. Like, that's a great analogy. He's Reggie Miller on steroids, where he's in the perfect system and he's in a perfect situation. And he's a microwave, man. Duke can heat up in seconds. And then, to me, he's more explosive than what Steph can do, because Klay's release is so fast and so perfect. Steph has to dance a little. He has to dance to get his shot off. Klay can just, like, spot up. He can just run to the corner, spot up. He can take it inside. You know, he can post up. He can go in mid-range. He has a pretty solid offensive game. It's not as steep as an array of, like, a KD or a Carmelo or anything like that. But he has a good array of moves, and he knows how to get to the basket. So 60 points on just 11 touches, and he had the ball for a total of 90 seconds that entire game. That's probably better than the Kobe 81, dude. Like, that's more impressive to me.
Wow. I feel you. What about you, Ken? Your thoughts on Klay, man, going smooth off. 60 points, 29 minutes. Golden State blows them off the court, man. What's your thoughts on Klay's game last night?
I was disappointed. you know, like, I saw Klay had 60, and I was about to go to bed because we were out, B and I and Mike and Raph and FIFO. Shout out to NASA. We was at a show. NASA performed, and Uncommon NASA, Damone Tyrell, and Sketch 185. Shout out to them. Check them out on Apple Music, Spotify, wherever you get your music from. So we were there. You know, I just made it to the crib. Was getting ready to go to bed. I saw Klay at 60 in like three quarters. I was like, oh, let me turn this on and see if he's going to go for 80 or 100. And he didn't even play. He didn't even play the fourth quarter. And I wanted him to really get out there. And I know he wanted to get out there. He said he wanted to get back out there. And I think he should have gotten back out there. It was very disappointing, man. Like, the way he was shooting the ball, some of the shots that he was hitting, like, that's that Q just said was phenomenal. 90 seconds and you put up 60 points. And the one that he hit when he was going on the baseline on the right side of the court, and his back is like to the side away from the basket. He just catches it and turns around and nothing but net. And all I could do was just shake my head. Like, and I think in moments like that, when you have guys like him, and I think he could have easily broken the record. I think when you have guys like that, man, I think you have to throw sportsmanship out the door, because these are rare moments that happen. They rarely occur, that sometimes you have to embrace the moment and live in the moment. And if Indiana wants to sit there and let this man pop 80, 85, 90, 100 on him, then that's on him. you know, at that point, it's up to Nate McMillan to, because if I'm Nate McMillan, at some point, I'm going to triple team you. You know, I don't care. I'm not going to let you sit out here and embarrass me like that. It's just not going to happen. You know, 60 and three quarters? Come on, man. That's ridiculous. So I think Kerr, and Kerr has done this. He did this last year. He did it to Steph, where, you know, he would take Steph out and Steph was close to hitting the record. But I thought it was fantastic, man. To have that type of shooting performance, to do it in the nature that he did it, you know, just catching and shooting, you know, going up. He was actually literally going up for wide open layups. It was like layups. Mm-hmm. Nobody was around him. It was incredible and sad on the Indiana Pacers' fault. They should be ashamed of themselves. And they should actually – if I was the coach, if I was the manager, owner of that team, I would dock their ass, you know, for allowing that to happen, for showing
hey,
that type
hey,
of –
Hey, Ken, you know why this happened, right?
Why?
They didn't have Roy Hill.
Oh.
If they'd have had Hibbert, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, well, they'd have Hibbert, a lot of things would happen. But yeah, it was good, man. It was outstanding. What?
No doubt, no doubt. What about you, B? Your thoughts on Clay going off last night?
Yeah, it wasn't surprising. I mean, because didn't the man score 37 points in a quarter last year? So,
yeah.
it's not like this is surprising. The man scored 37 points and within a little under 12 minutes in a quarter. So, you know, it's funny because, you know, I remember we was talking about, like, you know, Jordan, and I remember I was talking how, like, people always try to hold Jordan to this high standard because they don't want to, like, let go of the precious era of Jordan. I was seeing a lot of that on Twitter this morning when I had tweeted about, like, man, Clay, you know, could have beat Kobe's 81 points at record. Man, the Kobe stands came out. they was so hurt and like, no, he wasn't gonna get it. You know, he didn't have a shot at getting it. What are you talking about? This dude had 29 minutes, he had 60 points. What do you think 12 more minutes he was going to do with that time?
Right.
You know what exactly. I'm saying? So if this man is capable of scoring 37 points in the quarter, what made you think he wasn't going to he that 81 was definitely in jeopardy. So it's amazing how people want to hold on to their, you know, their favorite player, you know, oh, I'm so glad, you know, Klay Thompson got put out. He didn't go in and beat Kobe's record. You know what I'm saying? It's like, dude, shut up. Just if it's
somebody said that.
Yes. Yeah.
When I tweeted this morning,
man, the Kobe stands came. They came for me. When I said Kobe's 81 record was in jeopardy. Oh, they got mad.
But it was though.
Huh?
It definitely was though. Cause check this out.
It was. Yeah.
Check this out. Will Chamberlain, 100 points in 48 minutes is equivalent to 2.8 points per minute. Klay Thompson, 60 points in 29 minutes is 2.7 points per minute. See? If they kept him in for the rest of that game, dude could have at least got 75. At least.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it's like, you know, people just holding on to their precious eras and stuff or their precious favorite player. Look. I'm a person where I'm all for witnessing history. I love witnessing.
Yeah.
I don't care who of it. Like I ain't gonna lie. The one time I rooted for the Patriots was when they played the Giants in 07 when they was going for that undefeated season. Because I wanted to, you know, tell my dad and all his friends, oh, guess what? You know, they was all bragging. Oh, it ain't gonna never be another 72 Dolphins. It ain't gonna never be another 72. And when the Patriots was that close, I came front. I was rooting for them because I wanted to witness history. I wanted to see an undefeated. I want to see an NFL team go undefeated in my lifetime. Just like I want to see Russell Wilson, Russell Westbrook average a triple-double this season because I want to witness this in my lifetime. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to witness this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, man. I mean, you know, shut up. People that's all hold on to their Kobe feelings and stuff, man, shut up. We know Kobe's good. This don't make – if Klay Thompson would have surpassed that record and scored 84 points – that wouldn't have made Kobe less great. Kobe would have still been considered pretty much the second best shooting guard in the league. He just would have had his record broken. You know what I'm saying? But I thought it was cool. I thought it was pretty amazing. I didn't watch the game, but when I saw it, I was like, jeez, 60 points in 29 minutes. That's crazy. And he didn't play a quarter. So I thought it was cool, man. I love seeing dudes out there just in the zone getting buckets, man. Just I love it.
Yeah, I agree with you, man.
Wait, hold on, real quick, Kyle. B, isn't it much more enjoyable to say that you saw a team go undefeated and lose the last game of the season?
I guess because it was the Patriots. So yeah, I mean, you know, me being not a super Patriots fan, I was like, and you know, when they lost, I was like, ha ha, that's what they get. But then at the end of the day, I was like, man, now I gotta hear my dad say, this is why I ain't gonna never be a 72 dog. So it's just like, you know, I want to see that in my lifetime, man. You know, I want to see that. So yeah, man.
Yeah, I agree. I think I didn't see the game either. I actually dozed off and then woke up and I saw a couple of tweets and I'm like, man, let me. And at first, when I heard that he had 60 points, the first thing I was thinking was, okay, he must have shot a bunch of threes. And then like to what the stat that Q just read is amazing. Like, and then when I finally saw the clips on Twitter, like he had layups, he had wide open layups. He was mid range. I mean, like he really. If you want to go look at his shot selection, his shot chart, I mean, like he literally hit a shot from damn near every spot on the floor. And, you know, I think it would have been easier to kind of dismiss it or whatever. I don't even think you can dismiss it. But I think some people may have said, okay, well, he just got it. Like, let's say if he hit like, you know, that's an out of body experience. You're probably not going to have those type of nights. But when you go for 60 and you're and you have that level of consistency as far as the mid-range, layups, I mean, now, like you said, dude, some of those layups were uncontested. I mean, like, he's coming through the lane. There's nobody putting a body on him or anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he clearly – and, I mean, I think – and, Q, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I saw at least two or three reverse layups. So, he's out there stunting on him.
Yeah, no, so, he had, like, five reverse layups, dude. He had, like, one, like, finger roll when nobody was on him. So, like,
right, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is,
if he was in the fourth quarter, they would have had scrubs in. I would have kept him in. I'm like, keep eating. I want you to get history. Like, if history's on the line, you should be able to stay out there.
And, you know, I thought about it. I think Klay not being in the fourth quarter probably has more to do with what happened last year. Mm-hmm. As opposed to what he could have done last night. I think Steve Kerr, they may not ever admit it, but I think the race for 73, you know, hurt them. And I think they wanted to, and they kind of blame some of that on the little nagging injuries and then ultimately Steph getting hurt in the playoffs. So I don't think that they really much like you guys, I would have loved to have seen it happen. I mean, you at 60. I mean, how many other times in your lifetime are you going to be at 60 points through three quarters and say, hey, you know what, Klay? Let's see what you can do. We're not going to change anything. Keep doing what you're doing. At the five-minute mark, if you're not where we think you should be, then we'll take you out. You know what I'm saying? And then at that point, like you said, if he's at – let's say you keep him in, and at the five-minute mark, he's at 75 points. You don't think he can get 81 in 5 minutes? Come on, man. I would have
just feed him. Be at the foul line.
Exactly. But I think, you know, but I understand why they didn't do it. And I think that has more so to do with what happened last year as opposed to this year. But, B, you're right, though. The Kobe fans, man, they bring the cape out when stuff like that happens. Man. They don't want to see Kobe's his numbers get erased.
Nope.
Yeah, the capes were definitely out. But a crazy game. And I think this also, and we'll talk obviously more about the Warriors and basketball as the season progresses. But I think this speaks volumes. And think about it like this, guys. We've already seen KD go off. We've already seen Steph go off. We've already seen Klay go off. This is the thing that's scary about this team. On any given night, one of these three guys are going to go off. Now, I think at some point, you're going to have a game where Draymond goes off. Maybe not to this point, but Draymond's going to start bitching about not getting the ball or not having the points. But, and I don't know how much he finished with last night, but either Draymond or his mom are going to get on Twitter and start bitching. But I think you know, his mom was tweeting the other day about him not shooting enough. But, I mean, as long as they – will you see this kind of performance in the playoffs? Yes, you will. Will you see this kind of performance in the finals? No, not like this, no, because somebody's going to be playing some defense. But I think this speaks volumes as to what Golden State can be. And that's scary for the rest of the NBA, because if he's got it going like that and Steph halfway has a decent going and KD has halfway decent going, there's not a team that's going to beat this team. Not like that. You know, you got to catch two of the three guys on an off night or shut them down. For, you know, because other than that, they score so much. So we'll see, man. But great night for Klay Thompson. Moving on to the NFL. Cam Newton, the reigning NFL MVP, was actually benched and did not start on Sunday night, national televised game against the Seattle Seahawks. The Carolina Panthers traveled to the game, and they open up for their first series, and Cam Newton is not under center. Backup quarterback Derek Anderson is under center. He rolls out, throws a pass, and the pass is promptly intercepted. And everybody was wondering, where's Cam? Come to find out, Cam was benched because of a dress code policy. So he was going to sit out the first series as a disciplinary action from Coach Ron Rivera. Come to find out, he got suspended for not wearing a tie. Ken, what's up with this, man?
Man, let me tell you something. When I found out that he was suspended for not wearing a tie, I thought this was one of the most ridiculous suspensions. I can't say of all time, because I'm sure there are others that are right up there with it. But it just seemed like it was a little extra for me. And I know rules are rules, and I understand that. And you have to make sure that everybody abides by the rule and there's fair and equal treatment across the board and this, that, and the other. But a tie? You know, and you cost yourself 3 points and the opening possession over a tie. Now, you know, if you're looking at it like this, the season is over. The season is over. Then, yeah, I guess you would make a decision like this. I heard some people say this, if there's some other stuff going on and Cam maybe was getting a little beside himself, you know, maybe this is a way to kind of put him back in line. You know, everybody's saying the right thing. You know, of course, Cam saying that, you know, he's the coach and he's got to follow the rules. And well, Cam, you knew that when you knew you didn't have a damn tie. And why don't you
exactly
have a tie if you know the rules? So also you can look at Cam and say, you know what? This shows a little bit of irresponsibility on your behalf, because you know the rules, and I guess maybe you felt like you were above the rules, or that maybe you could get away with it this one time. But if you knew you needed a tie, why did you have a tie? You know, and that's the thing. And you know what? And here's the thing. Like, and I think you said this either on Twitter, you know, nobody to have a tie for him to put on. Like, you care about fashion. I mean, you know, it was only a series, but you could have just put a tie on and just walked in. So how strict are the rules, right? You could have just put the tie on and just haphazardly had it on or draped around your neck. Are you saying that the tie has to be perfectly knotted up in a whimsy? You know what I'm saying? Or you just
and keep in mind, he had on a turtleneck.
Yeah, so and so you know, it's possible Cam was just like, I'm gonna do my fashion thing because that's all I have left in this season. So, you know, if I can't look good on the field, I'm gonna look good walking into the game before I look terrible on the field. So that's probably what he was trying to do. He was trying to look good as much as possible for the rest of this season.
Man, B, man, what's your thoughts on that, man? Cam Newton, the reigning NFL MVP, gets benched for not wearing a tie. What's your take on that, man?
This is a prime example of what I've always said about the NFL. You can have a dream season one year, and you have a nightmare season the next year, or vice versa. Have a nightmare season, and then next year you might have a little okay to almost a dream season. So it is amazing how, you know, Cam was from – they was, what, undefeated. They was damn, well, pretty much undefeated at this point in the season last year. You know,
yeah,
Cam
they were.
Was, Cam
they
was
lost
dabbing.
They
Cam, had,
to the Falcons.
Cam had the whole America dabbing, you know, from city kids to suburban kids dabbing all over the place. And like, it's amazing how the tables have turned a season later after making
good.
The Super Bowl. Not even, well, it looks like they're not even going to be in the playoffs, not even going to make the playoffs. just amazing.
They're fishing.
Yeah, it's amazing how tables turn for him. The Ty thing, I'm with Ken. I thought it was some BS as well because it's been plenty of times he didn't wear a tie. Like, you know, he had his fashion stuff or whatever the heck he'd be wearing going on, and he wasn't wearing no tie. So I'm definitely agreement with Ken. I think that was some BS. I think it's something deeper than that. Than a tie, something as simple as a tie, him not wearing a tie. It has to be. Someone got to dig something up. Where is TMZ? Someone got to dig something up deeper than to find out why this man got suspended for only not wearing the tie. I think that's BS. I think it's something deeper. I think it's something going on with him and the coaches, the front office, or something that's not out there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, mm-hmm. I call BS with that just because he didn't wear a tie. BS.
Q, what about you, man? Cam, man, like B said, man, this time last year, he had old white people dabbing. And now he gets suspended, or benched, if you will, for a drive that we can be honest and say that drive didn't cost them the game because they were going to lose anyway. But look at how it started off on national TV, and then the word gets out about him not having a tie, man. What's your take on it?
All ties matter, man. You just got to put it on, man. This is like just at this point, Cam just has to understand that all ties matter and you have to put your tie on. Otherwise, things will happen to you, man. When it comes to Cam this season, this has like been the weirdest fall from grace I've ever seen for a superstar. And
I hate MVP it. Too. That's crazy. Like,
I hate it had to be him, man. But at the same time, I'm not shocked by what's going on because this could very well also happen to the Warriors. Do not just stay woke on that in the playoffs. Because when you get so deep in the playoffs and you've had this amazing record-setting season for your city – and you're breaking all these records as a quarterback, and you're doing, you know, MVP, you're dabbing all over the place. You got the whole country, like B said, just going crazy for you. And you get to the big dance, and your pocket presence looks terrible. You don't dive on a fumble that you were stripped of.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make the necessary plays. And then when people try to ask you questions about it, then you get mad about it. And very immaturely walk off. I understand. Still immature. You need to stay and answer at least a couple questions and then walk off. But to do all that and then come back this season, lose that first game to the same team with a former third string QB out of Northwestern, and just have this downward of – they almost lost to the 49ers, man. The 49ers were literally a touchdown away from beating them, and if they had two more minutes on that clock, the 49ers were driving down the field. They had a comeback loss against Arizona, Ken, or did they hold on against Arizona?
If I'm not mistaken, they beat Arizona.
Okay, yeah, but Arizona was down by like four touchdowns, and then they started to come back. So you're seeing that the team is mentally weak. You're seeing that the team, ever since they let go of Josh Norman, man, they just don't have that heart in the secondary. Mm-hmm. And this comes down to pay your players, man. Pay your players. I don't care how overrated you think he'll be anywhere else. Josh Norman's in the playoff hunt somewhere else. Where's Carolina at right now? Carolina isn't even in the discussion. Tampa Bay is tied for first in the division with Atlanta. Yep. So we're looking at what Cam is at right now in his career, and I just think that the dude – he's mentally exhausted, man. I just see this exhaustion on his face, and he wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's a leader, and he's either – Cam is one of those guys in the locker room where he's either the most fun to be around or he's an absolute chore to be around, meaning when everything is going great, it's all, oh, we love Cam Newton. Cam is amazing. Right. You know, he's a great leader. But as soon as y'all lose by a touchdown or y'all have a deflating loss, Cam got the towel on his head. He got his head down, and people are wondering, yo, Cam, what's wrong? He's not audible.
He's Steph Curry.
Yeah, like Steph Curry, Steph does that too, but Steph is light-skinned, so I understand that. But the whole point when it comes to Cam is the fact that Cam...
He's stupid, yo.
Cam is supposed to be this leader, and what we're seeing right now is him crumbling under the pressure of having a disappointing season. And I think that comes to the fact, and I want to get everyone's opinion on this because I told people this a couple weeks ago. Carolina caught the entire world by surprise because I think everyone counted them out. And I think people were going into games playing down to their competition. They didn't expect Josh Norman to have the year that they had. They didn't expect Greg Olsen to have the year that they had. They didn't expect Cam to put it all together. Now, when you lose a Kelvin Benjamin, you don't have any weapons on offense really besides Olsen and Jonathan Stewart, a lot of teams are going to take you for granted. And I think Carolina took advantage of people overlooking their team, and they started to string together a couple wins, and then they started to get hot and gain confidence, and their defense became elite over time because they had Kuechly and they had
Thomas Davis.
58. And crazy on this, and they had an amazing interior linebacking core. Now they're all banged up, they're all hurt. They just cut the backup who took over for Norman. And it's just all downhill from here, man. So the tie is simply a microcosm, and it's simply just a symbol of what has happened. Little things derailing the Carolina season.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. And this whole scenario, man, just kind of reminded me of something that said back in when he was the former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys when Cowboys were in their hey in the mid-90s. He said, every player will be treated fair, but every player won't be treated equal. And what he meant by that was he gave an example. He said, look, he said, if I got a guy that is a four-string cornerback and we have a meeting, and he's asleep in a meeting, he's like, I'll cut that guy. I'll cut him. He was like, but in that same meeting, he said, if Emmett Smith is asleep, he said, I'll go over and nudge Emmett and tell him to wake up. You know, he said, everybody's going to be treated fair, but they won't be treated equal. Basically, I'm going to give my stars preferential treatment. A couple of things that I took from this was that I think, he said, I don't think it's just about the tie. It's a microcosm of things. I think for it to get to this point, and we've all seen Cam pre and post game. I don't think in all of the get ups that he's worn, I don't think he's worn a tie. And I'm pretty sure that he's been warned prior to this, like, look, you need to have on a tie. You're going to be speaking to the, and you know what? I'm to wear a tie, and they may not require Thomas Davis to wear a tie because maybe Thomas Davis isn't doing post-game press conference, you know, so, or they may not, whoever the starting right cornerback is, they may not ask him to wear a tie because.
I said, I think he has a thick neck too, Thomas Davis. So,
oh yeah, you know, he's got a huge neck.
Yeah, he has to, you know, wear a scarf as a tie.
So, you know, so my thing is this, like, you know, Cam, he's the leader of the team. Like you said, a lot of that stuff comes with his body language. When he wins, he's great. When he loses, he's a sore loser. And I can understand. I can actually appreciate that. In the face of the franchise. And I'm pretty sure this isn't the first time that they said, look, you need to wear a tie. So if they told him prior to this, I mean, come on, man. You in Seattle. Nobody couldn't run to Walmart to get him a tie. TJ Maxx, Kohl's, you know, the grocery store. Somebody got a tie. You know, there should have been somebody on the team who had an extra tie because there's always somebody who's got an extra tie. Always. I don't care what level you're on. If you got to go somewhere, if you're in high school, you got to go somewhere and wear a tie. You always have one teammate that will bring an extra tie. Did tie have looked good on his turtleneck? Of course it wouldn't have. But Cam is, like Ken said, he's about fashion. And that's okay, but there's a time and a place for that. You play football. The fashion part of it comes because, and people are interested in how you look fashion-wise because of what you do on the football field. If you're not playing football, people don't care what you're wearing. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it, like Q said, it's been a microcosm. It's not just the tie is a part of it. To be a lot of sentiment around the organization that Cam has kind of gone Hollywood. So you couple that with the fact of, you know, I think they've got, what, 4 wins this season. You know, the playoffs is not going to happen. And this was a team that was 15-1 last year, went to the Super Bowl. Like you said, everybody was dabbing. And, you know, now they come back. And keep in mind, if you look at last year's season, like Ken said, like they weren't – first and foremost, NFC South was trash last year. So they had – that was 6 wins right there. Well, 5 because they lost to the Falcons. But, you know, so the season just went in the tank. And, yeah, it's unfortunate, but hopefully he learns from this. But you're not above the team. And I, like B said, I agree. I think there's more to it. We may not find out about it right now. I think it will hear something in the offseason that maybe he and Rivera aren't seeing eye to eye. Because they did, trust me, he didn't just step off the bus and they say, okay, well, look, we're going to bench you because you don't have on a tie. They probably told him, look, don't you step your black ass out of here without a tie. and he didn't listen. And they may have, and Beyonce may have said it just like that. You know, but quarterback, man, you're the leader, you're the face of the franchise. You can't be getting suspended for not having a tie, or benched, if you will, for not having a tie. And I kind of, as I listened and heard them talk about the scenario, I asked myself, would this have happened last year? Nope. Winning cures everything. Winning cures everything. Cam could have showed up with a tank top on, with a wife beater, and they'd have been like, hey, man, we're going to get you some more clothes. But he wouldn't have gotten benched. So, you know, losing exposes a lot, and winning hides a lot. So we'll see what happens with Carolina. They still got a few more games to play. The playoffs aren't going to happen. So, you know, they're playing for pride at this point. Speaking of the NFL, Tom Brady got win number 201, making him the winningest, including regular season and playoff, the winningest football quarterback of all time. Q, where do you rank Tom Brady as far as all-time quarterbacks?
Top 5.
Okay.
Top 5. Probably specifically, probably Montana. And it's probably him. And it's probably Manning.
Okay. Okay. So you put Manning above Brady.
Yeah. No. It's Montana at 1, Brady at 2, Manning at 3.
Okay.
Then Marino at 4. And let me get
Favre.
I don't like Brett Favre, but probably put him in there. Either him.
Well, I mean, you didn't have to give me your top 5. I just wanted to know where you had Brady.
Yeah, top. So Brady's at 2. Top 2.
Okay. B, what about you, man? Where do you rank Brady as far as all time QBs?
I'll probably give him 2, right up under Montana. He's top 5.
Okay.
Definitely top 5.
Okay.
I mean, if someone argue him being the best, I mean, you can't argue that. But just me personally, I got him right under Joe Montana.
Kenneth,
top 10, man.
We put Dante Culpepper Pepper ahead of.
I put like 9 black quarterbacks.
Hey, Ken got Mike Vick. Ken got Mike Vick over Tom Brady.
So let me get Warren Moon above Tom Brady.
Evans over Tom Brady. Over Tom Brady. Okay, why you got him in top 10, Ken?
You know, I have to do the list, man. You know, I can't knock his accomplishments. I mean, statistically, they are what they are. You know, but, right. you know, he's still a byproduct of that system. You know, him and Belichick, they make a good team, man. And I think if you take one away, you know, they're not as successful a part.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, okay.
Yeah, we have evidence of that a little bit. We all know Belichick before he
got paid. We
saw what Belichick, what the Patriots were doing before Bledsoe got hurt.
We saw Garoppolo when Brady was suspended.
Exactly. Look what happened there. He won with Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett. He won with what's the other guy when Brady lost the season?
Matt Castle.
Matt Castle.
And we saw what happened with him when he left that system. So it's no knock on Brady because that system is tailor-made for him. He works it to perfection. Brady puts in the time, the effort, the work. He studies. He works his ass off. He takes care of his body. He has a very – and from what I'm hearing now and all this stuff seems to be new, and I think this stuff is leaking out because he's starting to sell stuff. I don't know if you guys saw this 12 stuff that he has, but he's starting to sell all of his merch and stuff. So Brady's getting prepared for retirement. And now we're starting to hear about how he takes care of his body and stuff. I think that's on purpose. But from what I'm hearing, it sounds like it's very LeBron-esque. Like LeBron spends over $1 million on his body. I'm hearing Tom Brady does the same thing. So, the numbers are what they are. The wins are what they are. And for that, he's to be applauded.
Okay. I would probably put Brady at 2. I would probably put him at 2. I can't foresee putting him over Montana. Even if Brady won another ring, I probably wouldn't put him over Montana. Because I think a lot of and don't get me wrong, I don't think that when we talk about the success of Tom Brady, I think a lot of it has to do with, the fact that he's won 4 Super Bowls. And you should get props for winning 4 Super Bowls. But if you look at his performance in his Super Bowls versus Montana's performance in his Super Bowls, it ain't even close. I mean, I remember the Super Bowl number, but the 49ers played the Broncos, and they beat them like 55-19. And I mean, like they literally could have pulled Joe Montana out after the first half. I mean, he was that cold. I think he had like four or five touchdown passes. And Brady, we all know Brady has never won a Super Bowl by more than 3 points. In fact, I think 3 of the 4 they've won. And there's no knock. I mean, that's still a ring is a ring. Championship is a champion. Nobody's gonna remember 20 years that you won. It doesn't matter if you won by 2 points, you won by 20 points. A win is a win. But I'm just saying if you look at the level of play during the – if we're talking rings, if we're talking Super Bowls, I try to stay away from the ring talk, but it ultimately comes back to, people want to say, well, Brady's got 4 rings. I mean, Montana's got 4 rings, but what did you do to get those – if you want to talk rings and we talk about what you did to get those rings, Montana was more impressive. Now, Montana's numbers statistically won't look like Brady's when it's all said and done because of the era in which Brady played. If Montana played in this era, he would be just as far, if not further, than Brady statistically. Like B said, if you want to make a – people can make a case for Tom Brady being number one. I'm not going to rank him number one. No, I just won't because I don't think he's better than Montana when it comes to that. But right now, you got to – and he's over Manning. He surpassed Manning. What's up?
And remember, when Joe Montana left San Francisco, he had Kansas City in the playoffs.
Yes, he did.
He was still balling, man.
Oh, he was still cooking. The thing was that it was extra mounting to play Steve Young. And, if you're the 49ers, you're in a win-win situation. You go from Hall of Famer Joe Montana to Hall of Famer Steve Young. So – and you're still back, and you still win another Super Bowl after that. So after Joe leaves, I've got him ranked 1. Matter of fact, I'll send you. There was something that I saw today. I didn't get a chance to send it to you guys, but I'll send it to you tomorrow. And it breaks down the rankings of the top 20 quarterbacks. I think the ranking is flawed, but I'm gonna send it to you guys anyway. Speaking of the Patriots, Rob Gronkowski, as we mentioned at the top, is out. He's out for the season. His back is banged up. Pistons, by some aspect, people don't think are no longer the favorites. B, who do you think are the team or the teams poised to dethrone the Patriots?
I think the Steelers, man. I think the Steelers can definitely be one of them teams that can get that can get going, you know, at the right time of the season and make a run at it. Who else in the AFC? Maybe Baltimore. For some reason, even though Oakland's been balling, I just got a feeling they going I can definitely see them lose to the Steelers, man. Like, I can see them playing like one of those experienced teams that's been there before. Maybe Baltimore. I mean, I haven't really seen Baltimore that much, so I can't tell. But and I forgot what their record was. But maybe them.
I think they're 7-5 too. I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. AFC is kind of whack, man. I'm trying to think. Who else?
Kansas City.
I'm not really sold on them either, even though they got a gutsy win against Atlanta this past Sunday. But I don't know, man. It's like a lot.
That was a choke. That's what that was.
Yeah, I'm not like really sold on. I mean, you know, if Patriots still had Gronk 100%, I would just say no one really. I mean, to me, this was the Patriots. The Patriots conference to take. But yeah, I would just say Steelers, man. Maybe just one, Steelers. That's the only team I got is the Steelers. The Raiders, they just I have a feeling they're gonna probably have that bye week, and then whoever they play in that divisional game,
knock them out.
Yep, I just have a feeling, man. I have a feeling, but I'm not saying I want them to lose. I just it's like one of those I can't trust them. You know, they're still young, they're still trying to figure it out. Sometimes you got to take those hard L's to kind of learn, and then you know come back stronger and better. But I don't know. I could be wrong. Oakland Raiders could ball out and be in the Super Bowl. I don't know. But yeah, Steelers is the only one I can probably see as capable and more experienced enough. You always can't count out Big Ben in the playoffs. So, you know,
true.
And then, you know, Antonio Brown is out of this world crazy. And Le'Veon Monster. Bell. So, like, offensively, those guys can put up some points and match the Patriots, man. Especially now that the Patriots don't have Gronk. So, you know, ain't no telling how that system is going to be. But I got Steelers. I can't think of no one else.
Okay. Q, what about you, man? Who is poised to dethrone the Patriots?
I like Baltimore. My favorite, though, because Pittsburgh just got Bud Dupree back on the defense. They just got Ladarius Green back.
Yep.
Ladarius Green, to me, is like, probably going to be a top 5 tight end in like 2 years if he stays with the Steelers. He signed a 4-year deal this offseason, so I think he's going to benefit. And the scariest thing is that Pittsburgh isn't even healthy. In fact, Pittsburgh is quite banged up. They don't have Marcus Wheaton. Hayward Bay is out. They don't have Martavis Bryant because of suspension. And D'Angelo Williams
smoke
is out.
Weed every day.
Yeah, exactly. And they're banged up. They have suspensions, and they still have like 4 deep wide receivers. Like they're like 5 deep at wide receiver. And Le'Veon Bell, as much as people love Ezekiel Elliott, and as much as I think he's a beast, you put Le'Veon Bell behind that Dallas line, I'm telling you, he's breaking every record possible. Because his movements and his vision is going to suit him so well going forward. He's going to be a running. He's going to have a 10-year plus career. Elliot, when I see him, Elliot's knees are going to take a lot out of him because he runs through a lot of contact. He takes on a lot of tackles, and that grinds on an old man's knees. Le'Veon Bell will stutter step in the pocket. He's patient. He's going to wait. Green dude is like 6'5", 6'6", can catch the ball. He can run. He's faster than most tight ends in the NFL. You got Antonio Brown, who's far away to me the best wide receiver in the NFL. Dude can run any route possible. He can make any catch that you can see Julio Jones make. He can make any catch that Odell Beckham can make, and he wants it. And the dude is like 5'10", 5'9", almost, and he plays like he's 6'8". So I love his heart. You got Big Ben. When Big Ben is on and he's on target, to me, Big Ben is a top 2 QB in the NFL. It's not even a competition. He, at some days, he'll look better than Brady because 45 points on Kansas City. Then he'll come in on Thanksgiving and destroy that defense. So it's like he looks amazing. And then you have another team that I like. I like Kansas City, speaking of them. Kansas City has a good defense. They're vulnerable at cornerback when it comes to Marcus Peters, because Marcus Peters jumps too many routes, and that's like his biggest flaw. But he's a good corner, but there's still a major flaw there when you're jumping too many routes. You have a good interior line. You have a good defensive line. And Kansas City has this weird offense that sneaks up on you, and they know how to execute in the late game. So I trust Alex Smith. Alex Smith has quietly become a little clutched over these last couple games. So I'm definitely looking at Kansas City. And my last team that I do like B brought up, I like Oakland, man. I love Derek Carr. Okay. Derek Carr, to me, give him two more years, he'll be in the MVP conversation. Borderline on it right now.
I think he's in it now.
Yeah, he's borderline in that thing right now. And to me, it's wide open, because can you make the argument without Derek Carr, does Oakland even win six games? I don't think that's even, you know, a question.
Right.
You got good weapons. You have good wide receivers here and there. Amari Cooper's going to be a stud in a couple years. But does that train go without Derek Carr as the main conductor? I don't think so. And we have to give Jack Del Rio a lot of credit, because people threw a lot of dirt on his name after his last couple seasons in Jacksonville, and you see how putrid Jacksonville's been. But he's turned that Oakland team around, and this is just proof that the world is ending, man. Oakland Raiders are on the way to the playoffs. The Warriors are good. No one knows what's going on anymore. We got an orange, you know, pine cone for president. Like, there's nothing makes sense anymore, man. But all I know is that I do trust Jack Del Rio. I trust Mike Tomlin if they can stay healthy. And I trust Andy Reid, man. I do trust Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt. What about you, Ken? Hey, man, it's the people are saying that it's wide open without Gronk, man. Who do you think is capable of dethroning the Patriots?
I thought it was wide open when they had Gronk. because remember when Brady came back and they just destroyed everybody, right? And I said that they were playing subpar competition. And then they played the Steelers, and they struggled with the Steelers. And it's been kind of a struggle ever since. For a while, they struggled with the 49ers, if you guys remember that game, and eventually they blew it out late. They traded Jamie Collins, so defensively they're going to struggle. Malcolm Butler loves to cheer on every single play that he stops, even if it goes way over his head. But when he's cooked, he has nothing to say. He gets cooked a lot. So you put him on a good receiver – because he's overly confident, you know, he'll get burnt, because he's not up there with the Richard Shermans, the Patrick Peterson, the guy in the Josh Normans, the guy in San Diego, Verrett. He's not up there with him. But without Gronk, it makes them even more vulnerable now. And when you have a guy like Khalil Mack in Oakland coming to get you,
yep,
what you gonna do, man?
You can make a case for defensive MVP right now.
Yes, you can. I mean, he is a flat out monster.
Khalil Mack.
Khalil Mack.
Yeah,
he's up there, man. And this is his second year, and I remember last year in the draft, they were saying that he was better than Clowney, and he's proven it right. Now, you know, Clowney's getting praises in his own way, but Matt makes an impact on the field in Oakland. Derek Carr has that it factor when it comes to slinging that rock across the field. They have two receivers on both ends. Who are you going to guard? Amari Cooper, Crabtree? You know, Seth Roberts can make a play. They got a 6'4 running back. They got a change of pace running backs and Richard and this fullback. So they can stay in the game offensively with the Patriots and can probably make plays defensively. Oakland's defense is suspect, but once they get going, it's a wrap. Baltimore, you know, I always hear that they struggle with them, but, you know, I mean, it's Flacco could get them. I mean, he could luck up and get one good game and take them out, and I'll take that. I'll take that over the Patriots winning any day. Let's see, who else? And, of course, Pittsburgh, man. Like, they're starting to get healthy. You know, they managed through the turbulent times without Le'Veon Bell, two games without Big Ben. You know, Eli Rogers can make a play in the slot on the end. Sammy Coates' fingers are broken, but he'll drop the ball whether they're broken or healthy. But you still have to be careful because he can't get you. So, right. And that's the thing. They managed to get through without Ladarius Green. But during that time, Jesse James became a threat in the red zone, 6-7, and jump up and snatch the ball. So, you know, I think the AFC isn't the Patriots. It's not theirs anymore. It's open now. And Gronk just, for me, opened the door a little bit wider because I think trading Jamie Collins is going to hurt them more than they realize. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm going to say this now. I don't know if it's being said out there. It may or may not. I haven't heard everything. I won't be surprised if they get rid of Gronk, too, because Gronk can't stay on the field. And we all know how they roll. If you can't be on the field, they don't have anything to do with you. And if they can get what they want out of Bennett or close to it in that system that they run, they'll run with it. They'll run with it. So yeah, man, I think it's wide open. I think it's wide open.
I think everybody made some great points, man. Oakland, I like Oakland. I don't necessarily like Oakland secondary, but I like the way that Carr has played, particularly down the stretch. I'm still a little concerned about Carr because he had his pinky dislocated. It was 2 weeks ago, and if I'm not mistaken, because I didn't see all of the game Sunday, but I don't think he's taking snaps under center. I think he's taking everything from the gun. So if he's taking snaps from the shotgun, that tells me that his finger is not healthy and is not healed. But they've still been effective. But that front seven is a monster led by Khalil Mack. Like I said, not sold on that secondary. Secondary is booty. But if that front seven can get to you, you're in trouble. Kansas City. I saw Kansas City, you know, pull off a great win this past weekend against the Falcons that choked. The real Matt Ryan showed up, but that's another story for another day. What was I gonna say? Oh yeah. The Falcons choked. But we're talking about Kansas City. Kansas City looks good, man. Alex Smith has played very well. Like Ken said. Very clutch, particularly down the stretch. They won a lot of close games. And I think that speaks to Andy Reid and the way that he coaches this team. They're not spectacular on offense. It's pretty much Travis Kelce, their tight end. And then they throw the ball out of the backfield. They run the ball pretty good. But, you know, but you don't want to have to go to Arrowhead to play them. I can tell you that right now. That's a tough place to go in and get a win. But they're very efficient. And I think at the end of the day, if you're efficient and you're playing well, particularly in December, rolling into January, you got a shot. I'm not really sold on the Ravens. I like Joe Flacco. I'm not really sure about the defense as far as how much further they could carry him. But if Pittsburgh gets in, Pittsburgh's dangerous. Because offensively, Pittsburgh can put up points with anybody. Their defense isn't what we know Pittsburgh defense to be, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. Q made a good point. Everybody's getting healthy. And if you got a healthy Ben Roethlisberger, you got a healthy Antonio Brown, if you got a healthy Le'Veon Bell, those three right there will get you points. You just need the Pittsburgh defense just to kind of hold down the fort. I thought they did a pretty decent job in slowing down the Giants and Odell Beckham and Eli Manning this past Sunday. So, and their games are going, I think they still have one more matchup with the Ravens. And Q, correct me if I'm wrong, still have to play the Bengals again, even though the Bengals are going to be out of it. That's still a divisional rival. It's going to be a good game. So they've got a couple of games, a couple of hurdles that they have to overcome. But those three teams, I think, are probably the biggest threat. The Patriots are going to win the AFC East. That's about all I think the Patriots are going to do. Like Ken, I thought the door was open. And I really – and we talked about it here on the show, to give up on Jamie Collins so fast. And now the Patriots don't have a pass rush. And, you know, all of the quarterbacks that we mentioned, Alex Smith, Derek Carr, Ben Roethlisberger, you have to rush it. If you can't put pressure on them, you're not going to beat them. Because for the most part, none of those quarterbacks – well, maybe with the exception of Alex Smith, they're not going to beat themselves. So we'll see how this is going to play out, man. But the AFC, like Ken said, the door might have been open before, but it's really open now with Gronk being out. And, you know, if Brady is as great as, you know, we think he might be, you know, we'll see how far he can take this team, because he's going to have to do it without his main toy. So Bennett has been good, but Bennett's not Gronk. So we'll see how that plays out. Moving to the NBA, Russell Westbrook, man, averaging a triple-double. Nobody in the last, I think, 50-something years has averaged a triple-double this far into the season. I think he's on, what, six straight games with a triple-double. He had another one last night against my Atlanta Hawks. How long can he keep this up and they still win?
Man, we might be witnessing him. We might be witnessing history, man, because I don't see this dude letting up. He doesn't take a night off. He doesn't take a playoff. This dude plays 200% for however many minutes he plays per game. If he's playing, you know, 38 minutes to 40 minutes, he is playing at 200% those whole minutes. And he obviously has the green light, you know, not at Durant, that's not there. And I really think he's trying to prove that he doesn't need Durant, you know. And I think I said this when we had our NBA preview show. I predicted him to win MVP because I had a feeling he was going to go off this season. Not triple-double go off like this, but I just had a feeling he was going to go off this season. But for him to be – I think he can do it, man. I think, you know, it's still a lot of basketball left. We in the month of December. But, I mean, I don't see his numbers just dropping tremendously. If he doesn't average triple-double, he damn near – his average number is damn near going to be there. It's going to be like 28, 9.5 rebounds a game and 9.1 assists a game. Like, it's going to be that close if he doesn't. But I don't know, man. I mean, he's on the tear right now. I mean, he is definitely on the tear right now. I mean, and that's one thing about Russell Westbrook. He's not scared to go down there and get those rebounds. So I think he's definitely going to get those. He's going to still have those rebound numbers up. The assist number is going to be a little different. If he can keep the assist going, he's going to do it. I think his points and rebounds are definitely going to stay in the double digits. But yeah, man, this is crazy. This is crazy. I think we might be witnessing a triple double season, man, which would be crazy. Which I would love it. I would love it. I can. Right. This would be something I can rub in my dad's face. Like, look, you said this was going to never happen, but it's happening. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, even my dad's been impressed. I talked to my dad a few times about this. Like, as he's on the street, he's like, yeah, he's like, you know, yeah, I think this dude is really, he could be on his way to getting it. So, yeah, I think I don't know how many games, like, consecutively he can keep getting a triple-double, but, man, as of right now, I think we might be seeing, you know, if his numbers are still like this come All-Star weekend or maybe like a couple of weeks before All-Star weekend, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's going to get it. I think he's definitely going to get it.
Ken, what about you?
Oscar Robertson, what, got 41 triple-doubles?
That season. And
that was enough to average a triple double for the year. I don't know what those games look like individually, but it shows you don't have to do it every game. Like, it's the reason why I brought it up.
Right.
And man, I think that what he's doing is, I mean, on one hand, it's pretty amazing. On the other hand, it's like, well, what do you expect? Because he's the only one there. And this is just how he plays. And a lot of these stats, he'll just accumulate off him just playing the game the way he knows how to play it. That's giving his all. And, you know, with nobody there to basically – I mean, because it's one thing to go out and do a score and win a scoring title. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to go out there and win a rebounding title. It's another thing to go out there and you know, lead the league in assists, you know. But to do it all and to do all of that together at one time, and not saying that he's going to lead the league in any individual area, but right. saying that just to do one is tough enough. But to be able to do all three consistently over a night-to-night basis, it requires a lot of energy and effort. And you see why Kobe, Michael Jordan bigged him up. You know, and I think I heard somebody say that OKC is like Allen Iverson because it's just that one guy and then it's everybody else.
Right.
And I think he can do it, man, because I think he's really going to be the only guy throughout the rest of the year that's going to be able to go out and get those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Just
the assist numbers alone are crazy because he's not just getting – it's not like what Draymond Green was doing last year that everybody was so impressed by. You know, he's getting like 12, 13, 15, 17 assists a night. Mm-hmm. He's putting his guys in positions to score on a nightly basis, which brings up and elevates the team. And be able to get the rebounds on top of that is crazy. So I'm curious to see it play out. I'm looking forward to seeing it play out. And actually, to be honest, I've enjoyed watching LeBron have this little moment where he's flirted with averaging a triple-double. And even when James Harden was close to averaging a triple-double. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, Westbrook is just in a position on his team where he's really the only guy there. And if you think about it, and remember when LeBron had nobody? And yep. he was damn near putting up triple-doubles like this?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much the same thing. When you're that talented and you're the only person on that team, you have to do – all of it,
yep.
in order to give yourself a chance.
And that's the same thing my dad said, comparing Oscar Robertson's season to this season, because Oscar Robertson didn't have nobody. He was right. that dude. You know, yeah. My dad said Oscar Robertson in the season, he didn't get a ring until Kareem came there. A young Lew Alcindor came there. And my dad said Oscar knew the moment that they drafted him, Oscar knew that they was going to win championship that season because he knew he had someone. He had someone to kind of mm-hmm. kind of lean on, and he didn't have to, you know, carry all the weight himself anymore. And look what happened. They won a championship, right? You know, so like he witnessed that. He saw that happen. Like, you know, so, like the same way we see, like, yeah, they're going to win it or they're going to do something. Oscar knew it. So when they got Lew Alcindor, they was winning the championship, and they did. So, yeah, it's amazing, man. I think it's dope. I hope he does it. I just want to rub this in my dad's face. I hope he does it.
Hey, I'm like you, man. I would love to see it happen. I think, much like you, I've talked to my dad about it too. You guys know my dad. He loves Oscar Robertson, one of his favorite players. And I remember talking to him a couple weeks ago, and he was like, "I don't know if he can do it." He said, "Like, it takes a lot." He was basically saying the regular stuff. And then, you know, as the weeks has progressed, we were talking the other day and he said something. He said, look, he said, if we move into January, he said, if you look around in mid January, he said, and he's still like, he said, if he's at like 11, because obviously the hardest thing is the rebounds. He said, if he's at like 11, 11 and a half rebounds, he's like, it's probably going to happen. He said, because his rebound totals probably won't tail off. And he said, one thing about a triple, you know, averaging a triple double, he said, you don't have to get a triple-double every night to average a triple-double. If he can push his rebounds up to like 11, 11 and a half a night, he's like, they probably aren't going to taper off. So the nights that he gets 8, the nights that he gets 9, you know, it'll offset, but he won't fall under 10. So he'll have the numbers. One other thing I heard on the radio today, Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double playing 45 minutes. Russell Westbrook is only playing 35 minutes a night.
Mm.
That's crazy to me. So he's playing 10 less minutes a night, and still putting up just as big, if not bigger, numbers. And it's not, when you watch him, it's not forced. I mean, he's doing, we're not seeing any different from Russell Westbrook that we saw last year. The only difference was there's no KD, there's no Ibaka. So, I mean, he's got Oladipo, but, I mean, hell, what does that do? I mean, it's hit or miss with Oladipo some nights. So he doesn't necessarily have to go out and get a triple-double, but he has to do a lot more. But it's effortless. It's within the flow of the offense. Like, I watched I saw the clips the other night where he had a triple-double, and he had, like, 7 rebounds in the first half. That's just him going to the glass. And it wasn't like he's, you know, going taking rebounds from his teammates or anything like that. He's just being aggressive. And it's not hurting them on the offensive or defensive end. So, you know, he's not compromising wins for the triple-double. It's just happening within the flow of what he's doing on a night-to-night basis. And if you can do that and still win, and, I mean, obviously they're not going to win a championship or anything like that. And, you know, ultimately they're going to run into one of the juggernauts in the West, and it's not going to be enough. But I will say this much, that's still impressive. And I think, you know, much like my dad said, if we get into mid-January and he's hovering around 11.5 rebounds, he will get the title. By the All-Star break, if he's there, it's pretty much a wrap. I mean, he will get – and if he gets a triple-double – and somebody – and I can't remember. Somebody asked us this the other day on Twitter. If he gets a triple-double, is he worthy of the MVP? If he gets a triple-double, I'm giving him the MVP.
I mean, if he averages –
I'm not
– if he averages –
yeah, if he averages – yeah. If he averages triple-double, I'm giving him MVP. I'm not – I don't care what LeBron does. I don't care what Steph does. I don't care what KD does. I don't care what Harden does. Because I think that, like you said, that's history. And I don't know that when you study the game and you've been around and watched as much basketball, I mean, like, it's like this. There's certain records that we just assume that will never, you know, be broken or happen. I remember, like, watching baseball. Joe DiMaggio's 56 consecutive hits.
Mm-hmm.
That I never thought that. Pete Rose, I think, in the mid-80s got to like 41, 42, mm-hmm. something like that. And that was close. That was as mm-hmm. close as it was.
Yep.
It's hard to go get a hit every single night.
Every single night, yeah.
And so I put this right there with that kind of record, like, because this is so hard to do.
Shit, Miguel Cabrera getting a triple crown.
Yeah,
like, that was the first time that was done in 40 years.
I mean, it's damn near impossible. And you guys know, because you guys play basketball. People, and I think sometimes we get a little desensitized to, because we see it so often, particularly when we see guys like LeBron, Harden. It's hard to get 20 points in a game,
mm-hmm.
let alone getting 20 points against other professionals.
Yeah.
Let alone get 20 points and 10 rebounds. Let alone get 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, you if you played the game, and I never played basketball competitive other than, you know, in the gym and stuff. That's mind-boggling. It's hard as hell to get 20 points in a game. I mean, and we see 20 points, 30 points, 40 points. Last night we saw 60 points on a night-to-night basis, so we're somewhat desensitized to how hard it is. But that's not easy. And to keep that kind of level of consistency over a period of time, yeah, I mean, I think he'd get the MVP vote hands down. We got a lot of basketball to see and play through. Hopefully, obviously, he stays healthy, because he's, you know, health is going to play a huge issue in this. But he's on his way, man. I mean, we're just a couple of weeks from Christmas, and he's still sitting at a triple-double. And if we get into this time next month in January, I think it's going to happen. I definitely think it's going to happen. Speaking of the NBA, man, we're, like I said, almost a couple of weeks from Christmas. A lot of basketball has been played thus far. B, man, who has been some of the most disappointing teams or players thus far in the NBA season?
Teams, off the top of my head, I'm going with Phoenix and I guess Minnesota. Both teams are sitting at 6-14 right now. Eight games under 800. You know, these were young teams that we was kind of talking about to kind of make a little push to the play, you know, for, even though it's still early. I mean, you know, just based off this season, I did not think that Minnesota and Phoenix would start off, you know, would be 8 games under 500 at this point, you know, of the NBA season. You know, I thought they'd have been teetering right at that 500, maybe a game or two over 500 right now. But no, if I have to go for disappointment right now, it's definitely both of those teams. They got good young superstars, you know, especially Minnesota with Coach Tibbs. You know what I'm saying? Like Coach Thibodeau, I would not think they would be eight games under 500 right now. So that's definitely disappointment. If I was to go player, I follow teams, but I guess I just had to keep it hometown as Detroit. I'm disappointed in Stanley Johnson, man. I would expect him to take after having, you know, a good kind of a breaking out a little bit in the playoffs last season. I thought it was going to roll into this season, and he, mm-hmm. you know, rumor has it he's not getting along with Stan Van Gundy, you know, right now. Yeah. You know, Stan Van Gundy mentioned that. He said, you know, the reason why his minutes is being reduced because of his work ethic, and, you know, Stanley Johnson saying that, that's not the case. And so, yeah, I was definitely expecting Stanley Johnson to kind of take that leap. Just how KCP has been taking a leap forward every single season since we drafted him. I was expecting Stanley mm-hmm. Johnson to kind of make that leap too and kind of start to own that starting small forward position, but he hasn't owned it yet. You know, it's still owned by Morris and Tobias Harris. You know what I'm saying? So I was hoping Stanley Johnson to kind of, you know, take another step forward. So if it was anyone I was disappointed in, he's the first person I can think of. That's just because that's his home team and I follow my Pistons. You know, oh, and they whooped Atlanta Hawks' ass. This but that's another story for another day. But, yeah. So, yeah, Phoenix, Minnesota, and Stanley Johnson as far as disappointed player.
Okay. What about you, Ken?
I didn't know we lost Q.
Yeah. I don't know what happened to him.
For me, man, I agree with Minnesota. I am so disappointed in them, man. Like, I don't know what's going on. And I'm hearing that Tibbs is frustrated with the team because he expected more from them. But he has to be patient, man. Those are young guys.
Yep,
real young.
They're going to need his guidance to get them to the level that they need to get to because the talent is there. It's on him. And I think he got guys that want to compete. He has guys that have played on championship team or championship contenders. So these guys are competitive, and they're going to put in the work. So it's up to him to make it all work together. So definitely disappointed in them. I thought they would be way better than what they are now. And they've lost some close games. The Kings, I think I say this every year.
Okay.
I thought they would be 7-13. I don't know, man. Matt Barnes is a thug. I love you, Matt Barnes. Don't come after me. But he out there choking women and punching.
We don't want no problems.
Yeah, I don't want any problems, man. You're my favorite player in the NBA. But he out there choking people, man. You can't be choking people, Matt Barnes. Get it together, bro. So now, you know, so that team is dysfunctional. But still, I thought that they would be a little bit better. Than what they are, at least 500,
right?
Or a little bit above 500, like in contention with everything. And I'm disappointed in the Lakers, mainly because I thought they would have a worse record than they have, but they don't. So I got to give Luke Walton credit. He's doing a good job with that team, man. 10-13, they're competing every night.
So you're disappointed because they're doing good.
Yeah, because it, I'm wrong. Yeah, I'm wrong on Luke Walton and so forth.
Oh.
I'm being selfish, B.
Okay.
But nah, man, it's interesting the way he's doing it with that team because I really thought D'Angelo Russell was going to take a step forward, but he really hasn't. You know, he still looks a little bit he's better than he was last year, but not by much. You know, he's not dominating. He's not that guy. Luke Walton is really doing it with everybody. And that's really kind of, because he has a lot of different pieces there. And some of them do the same thing. But the way that Golden State played, it's like he brought some of that there. And it's working. And it's actually having them in some of these games. So So yeah, man, props to Luke Walton. And who else? And you know what? There's one other guy I'm a little disappointed in, but I knew he was still a little bit raw talent wise. And he didn't get a chance to develop under Dwayne Wade. Justice Winslow. He's been
okay,
hurt.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the focal point. They really want to run the offense through him. But, you know, he hurt his wrist. He's out. He's out another four games. He's been out for almost a month now. And efficient, he's not efficient in his scoring. His shooting has only improved by a little bit, but I was hoping he would really, like, take that next step. Like, with Dwayne Wade, you saw it, and then you saw it, like, really just pop out. It hasn't popped out with him, and I'm starting to wonder if it will, but I'm still reserving the right to withhold judgment just a little bit because he was a rookie last year, and that was Dwayne Wade's team. So they've now just shifted it to this team, to him. But he has to stay healthy and get on the court, and we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, that's all I have for right now.
Okay. For me, Timberwolves, as you mentioned, a little disappointed in them. I mean, like, they're young, and so I'm still going to give them. I'm gonna cut them some slack because they're still young. But I thought that this team probably could take the under Tibbs. I thought they could probably take the next step and be pushing for a playoff spot. And that looks like that's not going to happen. Boston, a little disappointed, but I don't have their record pulled up. And I know that Boston, they've been up and down. They've been up and down. And I was looking for a little bit more consistency. I honestly thought that Boston would be in the position where they would be at least, at the very least, pushing the Cavs, like where Toronto was last year. I thought that's where Boston would be with the addition of Al Horford, who happened to miss a game-winning layup last night, but that's another story for another day. And Al has been in and out of the lineup with a concussion and a little nagging injuries or whatever, but I thought Boston would be better. Indiana. A little disappointed in them, too. They've gotten off to a relatively slow start. You look at that lineup with Paul George, Jeff T. I thought that coming off the summer that Paul George had with the Olympic team that, you know, he would be much better and subsequently carry the team a lot more, off to a really, really slow start. I know a couple of weeks ago they had like a players-only meeting. And, you know, if you're having a players-only meeting 20 games into the season, something's wrong. They won a couple of games after that, but, you know, subsequently gave up last night 60 points to to Klay Thompson. And, again, if you haven't seen the clips, go watch the clips of those shots. Klay Thompson was shooting wide open threes and layups. I mean, his layups were uncontested. So a little disappointed in Indiana. I don't really have too many players that I can think of off the top of my head who I'm disappointed in. Now, two players I feel for. Boogie Cousins. I feel for Boogie Cousins because there's really not a lot in Sacramento, to be honest. I mean, as far as what he's playing with, I got a chance to watch who was that? New Orleans and New Orleans versus Memphis last night, and I really feel for Anthony Davis because he's playing with a bunch of nobodies. I mean, like, they had their starting lineup out there. I couldn't name. Anthony Davis is the only guy in the starting lineup I knew. No, I take that back. The kid from Oklahoma started last night, but I don't even think he's a normal starter. You guys know what I'm talking about, the rookie. What's the kid that played at Oklahoma last year? Three-point shooter. Rookie from Oklahoma.
Buddy Hill,
yeah. He started last night, but I don't think he starts on a night-to-night basis.
He's struggling.
That game went in a triple overtime, and I don't think he sniffed the court. So I feel for both those guys. They're not having disappointing seasons, but I feel for them because these guys are two of the best big men in the game, phenomenal talents, but they're just playing on some bad basketball teams. And it's just – and I text one of my boys. I asked him, well, how long does Anthony Davis stay in New Orleans before he gets the hell out of there? We know, obviously, he just signed a new contract. My boy responds back to me. He said, Anthony Davis will be a Laker in 3 years. I said, man, please don't say that. Please don't say that. I was like, I do not want to see him in a Laker uniform. So those are a couple of players, man, that I just feel for. Like I said, not too many players are actually disappointing me, but those teams that I mentioned, I'm a little down on those teams. Of course, we got a lot of basketball left to be played. We've seen teams, you know, go on runs. We've seen teams, you know, get beat by lesser, you know, teams or what have you. So season is still young. Of course, we got the Christmas Day games coming up in a couple of weeks. And there's good basketball on each night, man. So make sure that you definitely, definitely tune in to that. In the show, time to do what we do every week before we get out of here. A little segment that we'd like to call One Gotta Go. Now, these items, these ideas that we're going to talk about are not from us, not from Dead End Sports. They are from my partner in crime, my man Eclectic. Shameless self-plug. Make sure that you check out my new podcast on the 12 Kyle podcast. Me and Eclectic will be reviewing Redman's Muddy Water. That podcast will be out on Thursday, the 20-year anniversary of Muddy Waters from Redman. So Eclectic, he runs One Gotta Go at One Gotta Go on Twitter. So throw these things out here to Ken and B, and pretty simple, One Gotta Go. Give you four topics. One has to go. Let's go with quarterbacks. B, Andy Dalton, Derek Carr, Andrew Luck, or Kirk Cousins. One gotta go.
You said Dalton, Carr,
Luck, and Kirk Cousins.
Dalton.
Kid, who has to go? Dalton, Carr, Luck, or Cousins?
Kirk Cousins.
Whoa. Get him out. I get rid of Andy Dalton.
No. No.
I'm getting rid of Andy Dalton, man. I'm getting rid of the Red Rifle.
Andy Dalton can at least win, beat good teams, but we're not going to get into all that.
You like that. You like that.
All right, let's keep it on quarterbacks, man. Actually, I got a couple on quarterbacks. Ken, Eli Manning, Joe Flacco, Russell Wilson, or Ben Roethlisberger. One gotta go.
Flacco.
That's a layup for you.
Yeah.
What about you, B?
You said Flacco, Eli,
Russell
Wilson. Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Yeah, Russell, they all got rings. Russell Wilson and Ben Roethlisberger.
Flacco. Yeah, I guess I go with Flacco.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep the trifecta. Even though I love Joe Flacco,
I don't love him, but
I do. I love him. I love Flacco. I don't know why y'all don't like.
I mean, he all right with me. I mean, that's Ken that just that don't what, like man? Him. Like him.
Anytime I mention Flacco on Twitter, man, people all in my mentions talking about how they don't like Flacco. I like Flacco.
He was overrated. He's not flashy. Man.
Hey, he bet on himself, man. He
was overrated and overhyped way too fast, man. Off of that one run. Trent Dilfer went on the run, for Christ, crying out loud.
20 million, man. 20 million. That's all I got to say. Ken, you'll appreciate this. The brother quarterbacks, Cam Newton, Tyrod Taylor, Dak Prescott, and Jameis Winston. One got to go.
Oh, that's easy. Man.
Tyrod Taylor is absolute. Oh, my God, this dude.
Yeah, that's mine. That's my pick, Tyrod Taylor.
Why did they give him that money?
Hey, man, because they ain't had nobody else.
Oh, my God.
Why didn't Jeff push that money?
He's making us look bad, man.
What, Kyle?
Oh, Ken said he's making us look bad.
He is, man.
I'm getting rid of Taylor, but and there's no knock on Dak, but Dallas hadn't beaten anybody. Just keep that in mind. But I'm getting rid of Taylor. All right, so let's take it in NBA. There's a caveat to this. Healthy and in their prime, all right? B, healthy and in their prime. Carmelo, Kyrie or D Wade? One got to go. Carmelo, Kyrie, D Rose, or D Wade? In healthy, I mean, and in their prime.
I mean, Kyrie's still in this. He's getting into his prime, really.
Right.
But yeah, he's still young. And you said one got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, man. See, I like Melo. I like Melo, man. I like Melo. Because I always vouch for him when I say he was the best scorer in the NBA. Like, he was the most all-around best scorer in the NBA.
Right, right.
You said Derrick Rose. And then who else was that fourth person?
D-Wade.
I probably got to go with Rose, man.
The MVP, the former MVP? We're talking prime now, in his prime healthy. In his prime healthy, MVP.
Yeah, but he couldn't get past LeBron and company. He couldn't even get to the finals. Couldn't even get to the NBA finals.
That's true.
I mean, he had those Chicago Bulls teams were some good teams. So it wasn't like it was Derrick Rose and just nobody else. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So,
right.
Number one seed, yeah. What you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right.
Never made to the NBA Finals, man. So I gotta go with Rose. Rose gotta get up out of there.
All right, Ken. Well, we know who you're not picking.
Yeah. So I'm with you. It's gonna be Rose, man. He played a lot like Wade, very reckless with his body. He's paying for it, or has paid for it. Right, but yeah, right. Number one seed. I never believed in those Bulls teams back then.
I used to tell.
I
thought they could get it done, man.
Nah. I didn't. Everybody was on the Chicago Bulls bandwagon.
Yep.
And and LeBron and Wade got them boys up out the paint.
And, quickly, too.
Yeah, it was quick.
I think they lost five games, right?
Yep.
Yeah, quick work. Because I think they won the first game.
Yep.
And then that was it. But, get rid of D-Rose, man. I need somebody that's going to be able to hit a clutch free throw when I need it at the end of games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the minority here. I'm going to – and this really isn't fair to him because he's in. I'm basing this on him being in his prime now. I'm gonna get rid of Kyrie because I think Melo in his prime is an MVP candidate. I think D Rose obviously in his prime is one MVP candidate, and D Wade in his prime was, dare I say, Jordan-esque. Because I think we would agree D Rose in his prime was that 06 final. Was it 06, 07 finals?
06.
So yeah, I gotta get rid of Kyrie.
I ain't touching Kyrie. Letting Kyrie go. No, just like to piggyback off Ken's point, Kyrie hit big shots, and he just proved that this past season. And he does. Kyrie's probably one of the best finishers, man. Going to the rack, man. Like Derrick Rose wasn't as good of a finisher as Kyrie Irving is, man. Kyrie Irving
just athletic,
huh?
Yeah, Derrick Rose was just really athletic, and sometimes he would just throw shit up.
You're right. That's what I'm saying.
But Derrick Rose MVP season. Derrick Rose in his prime against Kyrie right now.
Nope, because Kyrie jumper was wetter. His handles was better. You know what I'm saying? Everything.
Yeah, Derrick Rose couldn't really shoot like that. He got better.
Derrick Rose was MVP wet season.
Like,
he wasn't
wet like Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving got moments where he wet. He wet.
Think about this, Kyle. We're looking at Kyrie, and sometimes we're questioning whether or not he can shoot as good as Steph Curry.
Right.
The best shooter of all time.
He went up against the
back-to-back unanimous MVP.
We know who won that finals. It wasn't Kyrie hit the game winning shot, but he didn't win the finals.
But he was balling.
We were saying that
Kyrie was damn near the finals MVP.
Mm-hmm.
No question. My only thing is that when I think of and it's people feel this way about D Rose. I just, if I go back to 01, D Rose in his prime, MVP. I mean, like, we thought this guy was going to be VP or in a discussion every year. And, you know, look at what it is.
Big games, man. He didn't win those big games. And just skill for skill, Kyrie was just, he was better. Just skill for skill. Besides the athletic part, okay, Derrick Rose got him an athletic part. Mm-hmm. But other than that, skill for skill, Kyrie was better. Kyrie got one of the dopest handles I think I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of a lot of basketball. Kyrie Irving handles is pretty sick. Pretty damn sick.
I mean, handles arguably the best in the game right now. Okay. We got two music ones that are gonna get out of here. Let's go songs.
Hey, wait a minute. Hey, hold on. What's up? I know you're talking about it in his prime, but Derrick Rose couldn't even beat LeBron James without Kyrie and Kevin Love. Remember?
Yeah, but when they faced them, it was what, wasn't that D Rose? I mean, I'm sorry, not D Rose.
I'm talking about the Cavs.
Wasn't that
2 years ago? They had Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose, Noah. Who else?
But they lost to the Heat, right?
No, you're talking about when LeBron first came back, when he first came back.
Yes, that first year.
But to Kyle's point though, Ken, he said in their prime though. Like,
I'm just looking at D Rose wasn't in his prime then.
Like, you had your full squad.
Yep.
And LeBron is limping. And maybe Derrick Rose wasn't as healthy that year, but that was your year, dog. Like, Jimmy Butler had ascended. I don't know. I just wanted to point that out.
I think that's a good point. I don't consider that D Rose's prime, though. I would think his prime would be 01, 02. And then again, like I said, it's kind of unfair to Kyrie because that's assuming that Kyrie's in his prime right now. And I think people forget Kyrie's only like 23, 24 years old. So
he's probably entering.
That's assuming that he's in his prime now. I don't think he's in his prime now. I think he's just getting started.
And to also offer a counter argument against Kyrie, Kyrie never did it by himself the way Derrick Rose did. Derrick Rose had a couple of bum teams where it was just him.
To be honest, Ken, we can make the same case for Melo. Melo didn't get it done either.
Yeah, but Melo got his teams to the playoffs. Kyrie never had a winning season until LeBron got there, I believe.
Oh, wow.
He didn't have good players around him, though. But
yeah, that's true, too. I mean, he had
– yeah, because Carmelo had them good squads in Denver. He had some good teams in Denver.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's go songs, hip-hop songs. B, I'll start with you. Dirt Off Your Shoulders. In the Club, 50 Cent. Pump It Up, Joe Budden. Made You Look, Nas. One Gotta Go. All the club bangers. Made You Look. Pump It Up. In the Club, Dirt Off Your Shoulder.
I say Pump It Up.
Okay. What about you, Ken?
I think I'm going to go with Pump It Up, too. Yeah.
Okay. I'll complete the trifecta, man. I love Joe Budden. Wasn't as big a fan of that song.
And that was his biggest
Never hit. Was, really.
And that was his biggest
Yeah. You know what? Because I was like a big fan of the mixtape Joe. Mm-hmm. So when I heard – I mean, don't get me wrong. If it come on, I'm going to jam to it. But it's not – I don't go crazy like when I hear it. People, you know, everybody else used to run to the dance floor and stuff like that. I was like, oh, okay. You know, but I was such a big fan of the mixtape Joe. Still a banger. Of the four, it's got to go. All right, last one before we get out of here. Ken, hip-hop song. Bone Thugs and Harmony, For the Love of Money. Respect by the Lox. More Money, More Problems by Biggie. And Junior Mafia, Get Money Remix. One gotta go.
So it's between More Money, More Problems and Money, Power, Respect.
Mine's More Money, More Problems.
Same.
You getting rid of 30 Rolls in the Sky, waving side to side, keep your hands high?
Money, power, respect.
What?
And I bought that lot. Did y'all buy that lot CD?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I got it. I got it.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah. Witches of Eastwick. Yeah. Yeah.
That. Yeah. Yeah, I got that.
Nah, man.
I ain't listened to it in a minute, but I got it.
I haven't either. It was so bad, boy.
It sure was. Because when their second album came out, We Are the Streets, it was like, okay, this is the locks that we
right.
This,
yeah.
Right.
This is the album that they wanted to make.
You know what, man? I'm getting rid of For the Love of Money.
What?
I'm getting rid of For the Love
What?
Of Money. What? I mean, you know what, man? And Ken, this is another album. What's the name? East 99? I got this album.
No, it's Creeping on the Come Up. Creeping on the Come Up. Creeping on the Come Up.
I'm sorry. Which one was first? Creeping on the
Creeping
Come Up.
On the Come Up. Creeping on the Come Up was in 94.
Okay, so I got this. So I got both. I can't against these other
tripping.
Songs.
You tripping.
I can't do it, man.
You tripping off
do
what?
It. I can't do
the
it.
Love Money was so banger, man. You tripping off that one. I'm sorry.
I can't.
And I love the song. Tracks.
Yep.
It was like 8 tracks.
Yeah. It was like an EP, right? I think it was
an album.
Good, man, but I paid full price. Okay. I paid an album price.
I paid it. Yeah. Yep. We paid an album price for that, man. Yeah, man.
Hey, well, I didn't pay for it. I didn't pay. I got a dub, but.
Man. Yeah, man. Bone Thugs. They were so different back then, man.
Man, they were. They were crazy. Wrong, man.
Man, For Lama, and then Easy,
and nobody,
Easy E, come on, man. Then I dash.
Oh, yeah.
Then I hide behind the tree, making so the motherfuckers don't see me. Get out of here.
But hold up. But you know what the thing about Bone is? Even after all these years, I still don't know what the hell they're saying.
I do. The whole album today. If you put it on and we drive it in the car, I'll rap every single lyric.
From the singing and everything, they had the perfect person on the hook, man. For love.
I'm
putting that over More Money, More Problems. I'm sorry.
I got to throw your rollies in the sky, wave them side to side. Money, Power, Respect. Get Money remakes.
No, man. Bye-bye, More Money, More Problems. Bye-bye.
Man, I wish I had my computer, man.
And now that I'm thinking, like, I remember on that was on Disc 1 of Life After Death, and, you know, you heard What's Beef, and then all of a sudden you heard, dun. I was like, what? Come in. I was like, oh, man. Like, that, hey. But don't get me wrong, like, B.I.G. killed, that's one thing that's so great about B.I.G. Like, he can go so raw on the commercial, happy-ass sounding track.
Right.
But the track, the song overall, I'm not picking
that's why I always say, man.
Over For the Love of Money. I'm not picking that over For the Love of Money.
That's why I always say Life After Death, man, was a great album, but it should have been a single. It was too many filler songs on the album.
Mm-hmm. I think that song, and then what, the song with Lil' Kim on this too.
Oh my gosh, Nasty Boy. Oh, that was terrible.
And the song with the song where he was singing
Player Haters.
The song where,
yeah, what, Player
three,
Haters.
What, 3 out of 24?
Player Haters.
3 out of 24, that's not bad, man. That, for a double album, that's not bad.
Nah. There's a couple other ones I would have taken.
Like what?
I don't know. Let me look at that.
Because the joint was too short.
What's the one we was arguing about?
I'm not even voting. Notorious Thugs. You better not say that.
I
can't believe you said that's a filler. I cannot believe you said Notorious Thugs is a filler.
Hold on, B. Before they jump in my mentions, I'm not saying that's a filler. I didn't like the way Biggie was rhyming. I think Biggie should have stayed on his lane.
That's what made the song so amazing, because he went with Bone Thugs. Biggie went with a style we never thought he had.
But
that's
Biggie, you don't have to go in nobody else's style. You Biggie.
No, yes he can, because if he's showing how versatile he is as an MC, I think that's dope.
There was two other songs that I did that was like I thought was fillers. Side One I think was better. And I can't think of it off the top of my head. I'll probably think of it once we get off. But yeah, I think, man, it was
12 joint. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean? Kissing You?
No. Yeah. Miss You.
Missing You.
Miss You. You talking about me?
Yeah. Miss You. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there was a couple of fillers on there, man. And I say that about most double CDs. I said the same double CD, same thing about Nas' double CD. I said the same thing about All Eyes on Me. I thought All Eyes on Me was just like four or five tongs too much.
Yeah, that second disc.
All Eyes on Me?
Very
similar. Yeah, that first disc. He started off right with that first disc, though.
Yes, sir. Man. Yeah. With Ambitions of a Rider.
Yeah, man. Trading War Stories? Oh, yeah, yeah. This one was it.
This is just me, and I'm in a minority. I think the best double CD was, or one of the best double CDs was 8 Ball's Lost. Y'all remember that?
Yeah.
Yes. I still have it.
Oh, yeah.
And
me too.
I think it's actually 3. Because I think they gave you a bonus disc with it, too.
Oh, I didn't even get that one.
Or am I thinking of another one?
That thick case? That real thick
case? Yeah.
Yeah, right. Real thick case. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's like my favorite.
Yeah, that. Oh, man. 8 Ball came with it, man.
Yeah, man. But it was so poorly marketed and everything, man.
It was poorly marketed, man. I don't know. And I don't know why, because this was 8 Ball MJG kind of at the height.
Yep. You got 3.
Yes.
Yeah, it was 3 CDs. It was 3 discs. But the third disc was just like almost like a compilation.
Okay.
Yeah,
really 2. So it was nationally.
So it's really just 2, but
I remember being in a thick case. I remember being in a real thick case.
Yeah, man. Still got the album. So double CDs, man, especially for those of you guys watching and listening, double CDs back in the mid-90s were a thing, and then, it kind of went away or whatever. But, I mean, it's hard to do. It's hard to do that. And I still, don't get me wrong, I still love Life After Death. I don't.
Oh know yeah, it's not ready to die level.
No, it's not ready to die. It's not ready to die. But I just think if he had done a single, and like what was Jay Z's joint? Blueprint 2.
Yep.
Yeah. Hell.
What do you think about Wu-Tang Forever?
That was dope. That was dope.
That one didn't have a lot of fillers, I don't think. Well, maybe.
That was solid.
Yeah, that one was. I didn't feel like, they should have brought it down to one disc type of
right,
type of
right. Album. And then, with 9 MCs, you got to have, I mean, if you want to get your full complement of everybody on the tracks. But I would say probably that one and 8 Ball's, and there may be one or two other ones that I'm missing. But double CD is hard to pull off. I don't know too many artists right now that could pull off a double CD and still give you quality music all the way throughout. It's tough because it's trying to condense all of that and keeping the concept and the thought process of how you want your album to sound and flow. It's hard. Yeah, that's hard. But yeah, man. Unless y'all got something else, man, I'm done over here. I don't have anything else. All my notes.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. What y'all got coming up on as far as reviews coming up?
We just dropped Mike and FIFO reviewed the weekend Sorry Ass Starboy album.
I didn't hear that.
And then we were reviewing Childish Gambino.
Yeah.
Next
week. Cole, Absol, and maybe Cudi. I think they got.
Are y'all gonna review gonna review Rhapsody?
I was gonna hit B up about that. Crown?
She has a good idea. Yeah, y'all gotta review. Yeah, it's been like 2 or 3 years since she dropped.
With this December about to be crazy, I.
Yeah, we're not gonna do it this one.
Yeah, we're not going.
Man,
then we got Run the Jewels. Run the Jewels coming out January 13th, so that's going to be probably our shoot when we come back from Christmas vacation.
So who else is dropping before the end of the year?
Smoke Dizzy and Pete Rock got an album together.
For real?
Yep.
Huh.
Okay. I hope Conway drop his album before this month is up. I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Okay.
Who else? Yeah, that's really, and I mean, it's a producer named Stro Elliott that's dropping the album, instrumental album this month. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
That's about it as far as on my end, and whatever we gonna review.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff in the fourth quarter, man. I was telling somebody the other day, like, this kind of reminded me of back in the day with the old Def Jam fourth quarter push, where Def Jam would have all of their dope artists come out in the fourth, drop something in the fourth quarter for the end of the year.
Yeah, because the last couple of years, it's just been dry. They normally just take a vacation.
Right, right.
You don't really get anything.
So let me ask y'all this, and I never asked y'all this before, but how much of the music that you review do you actually go back and listen to after? Because y'all listen to a lot of music. Do you ever find yourself going back to listen to that music, or is it just more or less?
If it's in my 10.
I listen to Cold. Okay.
Yeah, if it's in my top 10, I probably played it. More than I'll probably play it after the review, but if it's not in my top 10, never.
Nope. What about you, B?
How much music that?
You go back and listen to?
Oh yeah, like Ken. Yeah, if it's an album that's not top 10 worthy, then yeah, I probably won't revisit it. Okay. I'm listening so much other stuff. Like even
so much music, right? Yeah,
even
right,
just
right.
Stuff that's not even that we're not reviewing. It's just stuff that I just want to listen to that I like listening to. So.
Yeah, because it's not only just hip hop, right?
Right.
That's
right.
What we do.
Oh, no question.
Right. Like,
yeah, there's of course the beat tapes, jazz, R&B. There's all kind of other stuff that I'm listening to. I know B listening to. We all listening to. So we don't just listen to hip hop like 24/7 like that. And to be honest, man, I find myself listening to podcasts more than albums these days.
Same here.
Let me know when you go off live so I can ask y'all something when we go off live.
Oh, I'll kill it. We'll holler at y'all next week.
We'll holler at y'all next week. Peace.